Good morning, everyone. I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order.
Operations.
Excuse me. I'm going to call the Government Operations Committee to order. My first mistake today. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Tice, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I would like to move the minutes from the last time, May 4th.
Representative Tice moves the minutes of the Government Operations Committee for May 4th. Representative O'Driscoll, all in approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
And all who are opposed, nay. So the minutes for May the 4th are approved. Representative O'Driscoll, I move your House File 659 to State Government Finance, if you'd like to proceed with your bill.
Madam Chair, thank you, members of the Government Operations Committee. As Chair Pugh said, we're taking up House File 659, and before I get into the details of the mechanics of what we're going to do, I'd like to talk a little bit about why we're here today and why we're doing what we're doing from a procedural standpoint. Representative Nelson, you have been on the Pensions Commission previously. Representative Albright and I currently from this committee serve on the Pensions Commission. Normally what would happen is the Pension Commission would do its work, it would put together an amendment, it would then put it into bill form and bring it forward. That activity is still going to happen. We have a meeting scheduled tonight at 6 o'clock with the Pensions Commission to go through that step. Everything that is in the way of amendments that are here before us this morning will also be before us this evening in the Pensions Commission. And I'll get back to why we're going to be doing that in just a minute. And I will also let you know that tomorrow morning in the Senate, the companion bill for House File 659, which is before us right now, will be being brought up in their government finance committee with the same amendments and the same procedure that we are looking at right now. Why are we doing this, a little bit of the cart before the horse, if you will, before we have approval from the Pensions Commission? On paper, 99% of the information that's in this bill, if you start counting pages, is fully approved and endorsed by the members of the Pension Commission. Much of it is policy, which is what we are in right now, is a policy year. As we all know, the first year of the biennium is typically the budget year. There's a little bit of supplemental work that gets done in the second year, but it's primarily a policy year. What we're going to do in the interest of time to be able to make sure that the legislature has time to be able to deal with other things such as transportation and bonding and those kinds of things, we wanted to get out early this week with the pensions bill and work on that. So what will happen today, if it's the will of the committee, is we will get the bill in the shape that I would like, and Senator Pappas will do the same tomorrow, and these will be the bills that will be moving forward as the pensions bill for 2016. Tonight we will go through the same steps in wrapping up the pensions bill and getting the Pension Commission's hopefully again endorsement of the process and of the bill, so that we have preserved the integrity of the legislative process on this. So again, given the time frame that we're in and wanting to allow plenty of time for the anticipation of other major things that the legislature is working on, we saw this as a great opportunity for us to kind of speed the process along a bit to be able to work on this. So Madam Chair, House File 659 will eventually become the 2016, Mr. Chair, we've changed chairs. Mr. Chair, we will be at House File 659, and what I'd like to do to get the bill in the shape that I'd like it in, I'd like to move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair.
2A. Representative O'Driscoll moves Amendment 2A.
Mr. Chair, before we vote on that, I want to again be very clear with everybody who may be in the room and members of the committee as to what the 2A amendment is. The 2A amendment is all of the policy work that the Commission has done this year, and it is the going to be the delete all amendment that we will end up putting into in the House File 659, which will become the vehicle that we will be using for pensions, and Senator Pappas will do the same thing. So, Mr. Chair, at your wishes or the wishes of the committee, we can either talk about it before or we can adopt it and we can talk about it again. I don't believe that anyone, House, Senate, or either caucus has voted no on any of the provisions as you've been working on it this session that is in the 2A amendment.
Let's put the bill in the shape that the author wishes, unless there's any questions from members before we do that. Seeing none, all in favor of the 2A amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we're going to put it in the shape that that I would like to also ask to consider right now two other amendments at this point that are technical correction amendments that the Commission would have acted on as well before we get to a the A5 amendment, the 5A amendment. And so, Mr. Chair, if we could, I'd like to have Susan Lincheski, who is the Executive Director of Pensions, come forward to explain the 3A and 4A amendments for the Commission, since they involve work that she and staff have done.
Sure. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I think we'll start with the 4A amendment.
Good morning. Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Susan Lincheski, and I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. I'll give a short overview of the 4A amendment. This relates to the PARA, Statewide Volunteer Firefighter Plan. It deletes a provision in the Minnesota statutes that relates to this plan that would have required plans that subsequently adopt or subsequently request to join PARA. It relieves them of having to reimburse the Spring Lake Blaine Moundsview Firefighter Relief Association for the administrative costs of doing that. So last session, this type of plan, which was a lump sum relief association plan, had previously not been permitted to join PARA, but last session that was allowed, and PARA estimated that the administrative cost of doing so would be about $150,000 to $200,000. After all of that was done, that work was done, it turns out that the administrative costs were $52,000, so there was much less to be reimbursed to Spring Lake Park, Blaine, Moundsview. So they are sort of releasing any other future association from having to reimburse them for those costs.
Mr. Chair, one point of clarification. Ms. Lincheski talked about PERA administered. One of the features that PERA does for some of the smaller relief associations is that they will do the administration of benefits. There are no state dollars that go into that plan. There's simply there's a mechanism in place to be able to help with the administration of those plans. And this is what Ms. Lincheski is referring to as some work that was done last year, and this is some cleanup on that from a financial standpoint. So I'd stand for questions if there are any on the 4A amendment.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Thank you, Ms. Lincheski, for your testimony. Members, any questions to the 4A before we add this amendment? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Lincheski. I guess the question that comes to mind, and I guess I'm a little fuzzy about what we did last year about this, but why would they have to reimburse St. Louis Park? Were they doing groundbreaking into this, that they were the first one to do this, and that's why they were footing the bill, and then other people would have to reimburse them if they come back and use that sort
Ms.
of like
Lincheski.
A service agreement?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. That is true. They were the first. This is a lump sum relief plan, so this is a plan that pays out in lump sums. They were the first to do so. They wanted PARA then to administer this plan, and PARA was willing to do so, but there were administrative costs in doing so. So the legislation then provided that Spring Lake Blaine Moundsview Firefighter Relief Association would reimburse PARA and then would be able to collect back from future relief associations to sort of help them out with this cost. The cost turned out to be much less, and they are just sort of willing to you know, not collect on those additional dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative O'Driscoll moves the 4A amendment. All in favor of the 4A, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, the next amendment that I'd like to take up is the 3A amendment, which has, again, some additional technical corrections in here. This is, again, something that the Commission will be looking at this evening. And I will let Ms. Lincheski do a little bit more broad-based discussion on it, but it includes things that her office has found that they would like to work with, as well as the revisor's office has found some things that they would like to include in the 2016 pensions bill. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Lincheski.
Representative O'Driscoll moves the 3A amendment. Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is seriously technical language changes. There's nothing substantive about this. There were some provisions in the MSRS section relating to the disability application time period that was being changed in connection with the omnibus bill. And these are cleanup changes. There were some references that just needed to be deleted. And then the remainder of this amendment includes, again, some changes to cross-references. And these are changes that were needed as a result of changes in the omnibus bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions on the 3A before we put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor of the 3A, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that the Commission has been grappling with is since we concluded session in 2015, is there were some actuarial studies that were done that included a mortality study to determine how long people are living. And one of the things that we've discovered through that actuarial work is that men are living about 2.1 years longer today than they were 15 years ago, and women are living about 2.3 to 2.4 years longer than they were 15 years ago. So that means if you're a retiree right now, statistically you have a chance and the possibility of living longer than what our current mortality or life expectancy tables in statute call for. When changing those, which is a prudent thing to do to be keeping up with reality, that affects the amount of funding that we have or percent of fully funded for our pensions here in the state of Minnesota. So with that information over the summer and fall, the various plans that were affected with the different interest groups had gotten together to discuss and to go through a number of different conversations on potential increases in employee contributions, COLA adjustments for retirees, some additional COLA adjustments that are in statute, as well as some employing entity increases in contributions. Given the fact that this has a rather large price tag to it, and through the work of Senator Pappas, myself, and others on the commission working with the interest groups and trying to get this resolved, we came to two conclusions. There's an impact on the funds that begins on January 1st of 2017, and there's a second impact that through the proposal that would begin on July 1st of 2017. What we're proposing today is to take those provisions into consideration that would affect on January 1st of 2017, which is when COLA effects would go into place for retirees. What is being proposed in the 5A amendment is that we reduce COLAs for MSRS, which is one of the plans that's under consideration, from a 2% COLA in 2017 to the recommended 1.75, which is what the plans were looking for as a part of a global agreement. We continue to hear through this discussion that there's major savings that can be had on this by making sure that we get ahead of the COLA issues because of the COLA and raises, if you will, on raises on those kinds of things. Secondly, to remove the triggers that would say, based on funding at different times in the process, how close to fully funding, that could trigger some additional COLA increases. Those components were agreed upon by MSRS, those individuals who were affected by the MSRS plans. That was also in conjunction with something that was proposed to take place on July 1st of 2017, which should be employer contribution increases as well as employee increases. Because we are in a situation where, quite frankly, we didn't have anything in the governor's budget supplemental, the House supplemental, or the Senate supplemental that we could begin working on putting dollars in today, we'd literally just be putting policy statements in on the come that in next year we would end up having to find the money to be able to fund those related issues. We move over to TRA. They had a similar situation. They were looking at reducing COLAs for a period of time from 2% to 1%. This amendment also says for that 1 year, we will reduce that to be able to capture the savings that the actuaries and the plans were looking at for that 1 year period of time. And we'd also pull the triggers that would be in there to be able to keep us moving forward. Since 2017, 2018, the new biennium would be a budget year. Many who I have spoken to and many who have approached me have different views on this. Put it in statute without having, just getting the policy statements in there that says we'll fund it next biennium versus, wait a minute, that's causing tails, that's causing unfunded liabilities. Is that the prudent thing to do? So Senator Pappas and I decided that what we'd like to be able to do is take those things that affect January 1st of 2017 to preserve the integrity of that part of the process and then move into the next biennium to work with the funding portion of that in a budget year. The major fear is that if we put it into the budgets right now or put it into the statute and the legislature, for whatever reason, is unwilling, unable, or can't finance those, school districts will see an increase in their contributions without an increase in funding. State agencies would also see that increase without increases in funding. And so there's some real skittishness and hesitancy on this that I've heard from different groups related to that. Again, in the way of full disclosure, one of the other things that we are concerned about is preserving the state's bond rating on these kinds of things as well for unfunded liabilities. But putting it into statute, one could say, yeah, you're meeting that requirement, but there's no guarantee that the funding is going to be coming from the state to hold whole the school districts and to hold whole the agencies who would be required to pay these additional increases. The third group that's affected is the St. Paul teachers. At the request of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Association with the endorsement of the school board, they're asking for the district to be able to move their employer contribution from 6.5% to, I believe it's going to be 7% in fiscal 2019 at the district level. And they are also asking for their triggers to be pulled as they are from the other plans that I had mentioned as well. And so, Mr. Chair, that is the general extent of the 5A amendment, the logic about why we are here today with these types of provisions. It does policy changes, which saves a substantial money right now for the funds. It keeps people at the table because it's a one-year reduction in COLAs, so they will blink back on January 1st. It holds all interested parties to continue to work toward a solution on this. But it also helps us to be able to preserve some of the major things, which is addressing those COLA perspectives right now. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative O'Driscoll moves the 5A. Members, any discussion before we put the author's amendment on to the bill? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unless I'm reading this wrong, I think they go into effect for the St. Paul teachers in 2018, if looking at the amendment.
Calendar,
Representative O'Driscoll.
I think it's calendar 18.
Yeah, calendar
fiscal 19.
Okay, yeah. Fiscal. Okay, I didn't hear you say fiscal. So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative O'Driscoll, question I have here, I guess, in my mind is, so we're doing the policy stuff ahead of time, which will save a little bit of money by money not going out of the funds, but again, I understand there's no money that's in anyone's budget to put into these, and if we raise if we were to raise the employer contributions now, we're in effect cutting money to the school districts, cutting money to the for funding other programs to the counties and the cities and the state of Minnesota, because we're requiring them to pay more into the funds, and that's not part of their budget that they got right now. Sort of like what the article last week having to do with Minneapolis school district, that part of their shortfall that they come up with is that they didn't plan for that money, that the extra money that was put, they have to put in for their teachers' pensions. I guess I'm struggling with this because in some ways we're doing something that has got us into trouble in the past and got a lot of other funds nationwide into trouble in the past, is having promises benefits out there, but we're not funding them as we go. And that's one of the principles that I got of a lot of the meetings I've gone to at the NCLS, and is that they're saying that you want to make sure you fund this stuff and not leave a hole there that you're making promises or unfunded liabilities to the plans without putting the money in to pay for them and pay for them now. And if you wait, they get bigger, and I guess that's the question, I guess, in my mind. How much bigger is this going to be because next year and the year after, because we're not putting the money in the fund right now?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, you bring up probably one of the most excellent questions I've heard in this whole entire discussion on this. Two things. You were talking about counties and cities. They would actually be exempt on this part because they're covered by PERA. And PERA is not one that we're discussing, so just for clarification for folks on that. Number two, the proposal that we would be looking at to do a employer and employee contribution increase, it wasn't necessarily going to be from zero to that level. There was going to be a phasing in over a number of years. Still the same philosophy where it's not a budget year this year, and we're going to be looking at scaling it over two bienniums. We still have those same kinds of questions and same kinds of issues for where do we assure that the funding is going to take place. And so we were sort of at an impasse in being able to find, and Senator Pappas and others will tell you that this has probably been the number one thing that's been in front of us this entire session. I can tell you I've dedicated an awful lot of time trying to find solutions, meeting with an awful lot of constituency groups to try to find an answer to this. There is no perfect answer to this. And having been involved in negotiations and contracts, when everybody feels like it's not the best thing, maybe that's the point we've got a deal that we can at least move forward on this. My fear is if we don't do the policy stuff right now, we only continue to go this direction from where we are faster. It's not perfect, I'm the first to admit. It's not the end-all be-all, but it's certainly something we can do, because when you looked at it, there were two different time frames that this could end up being done in.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, so when you, in your opening statement, you talked about that the original delete all was the stuff that was 99% agreed on. I take it this is the 1% that the Pension Commission hasn't agreed on. Because normally when we get pension bills, they've already been approved by the Pension Commission, and you kind of explained that in your opening remarks. We normally get those here. In effect, the Pension Commission serves as a pseudo subcommittee of this committee to we pass this stuff on. So a little strange reading this and then seeing that there's a Pension Commission meeting tonight at 6 o'clock. So I guess, am I right? This is the 1% you say that hasn't been agreed on yet by the Pension Commission.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Representative Nelson, you are very perceptive.
Take that.
Representative Nelson.
Take that as a yes. Mr. Chair, is I guess we're going to hear from the pension groups after this, but I guess we'll just go from here. We can ask my questions of the pension groups when they come up afterwards.
Great. Any other member questions before we adopt the 5A? Seeing none, all in favor of the 5A, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The 5A is adopted. Representative O'Driscoll, to your bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, I stand for member questions or other testimonies you see fit.
Okay, at this time we'll move into public testimony on the bill. I don't have a list of testifiers, so if there are those folks that would like to testify on the bill, please make your way towards the front and make sure you introduce yourself for the record, and we'll look forward to your brief comments.
Mr. Chair. One thing that I did not do was go through the provisions of the bill, and maybe since this is the part that, as Representative Nelson said, is that portion that's more controversial. After this testimony, I can maybe go back and talk about some of the other provisions that are in the policy and just take a few minutes at the end if that's the wishes of the chair.
Right. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the State Retirement System. I'd first of all like to thank Representative O'Driscoll, Representative Albright, and the Pension Commission for all of the hard work they did this year. The proposal in front of you does lower our liabilities by $18 million by putting in a 1.75% COLA rather than a 2%. Our proposal did have a broader solution, and really the only point I'd like to make is that this will have to be addressed next year. Mortality is in, and it's people are living longer. We just have to address it. Our package, as Representative O'Driscoll talked about, increases employee and employer contributions, and actually had a permanent lowering of the cost of living from 2% to 1.75%, which lowers our liabilities by about $400 million. So while this does a small piece of where we're trying, it is just a fraction. And I just wanted to make sure that when this comes back next year, people don't think, oh, we fixed the problem. And that really is what I'd like to comment today.
Thank you, Mr. Bergstrom. Any member questions? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for your testimony. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, members. My name is Jay Stoffel. I'm the Deputy Executive Director at the Teachers Retirement Association. And I would also like to thank Representative O'Driscoll and Albright and actually Pension Commission staff as well for all the hard work that has gone on for the last year that we've worked on coming up with the solution. In our case, we have a $1.5 billion funding gap that we're trying to address, and we've worked very hard over the last year to put together a balanced approach that involves active members, retired members, and the employer side of the equation. And our package developed that. We proposed a package that ended up cutting benefits by $1 billion and raising contributions by 1% on the employer side. That's what we were working on very hard, and it's a very difficult process, obviously, but this step that we're taking, we appreciate trying to do something this year. Similar message to what you just heard from Mr. Bergstrom. We are a long way from being finished, and we realize there's more work to do. This proposal will generate $63 million towards the $1.5 billion funding gap that we have. So it's a very small sliver towards resolution of the total problem, so we will be back. Again, we don't want you to understand that this is a final solution here this year. A lot more work still needs to be done. The other thing I would say is this really is putting all the effort on this in this proposal is on the retiree groups, and so our one of our concerns is always addressing this problem with a balanced approach. But I will acknowledge that this piece that you're approving today, if you do approve it, is the piece that was in our proposal for fiscal 17. So it takes that piece, puts it in this bill, but we have a long way to go yet to do all the remaining pieces that we had in our plan to make it a balanced solution.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, we'll move on to member questions and discussion. Representative Nelson, I don't know if you have some specific questions. We can call folks up if you do, but go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's listening to it, and again, Representative O'Driscoll laid out a lot of this when he was in his remarks, but it looks like they're not satisfied, and you know, $63 million out of $1.5 billion for TRA, it looks like we're just scratching the surface on what needs to be done. Again, we're not putting the money in. $400 million liability for the MSRS is what I heard. It's like I said, it looks like we're not doing everything that we need to get done. And we talk about that nothing's been budgeted for this year. You know, I guess it's kind of strange that I've sat in the Pension Commission myself, and I've sat in the legislature here when we've had huge deficits, and we've found money to put into the pension plans to make sure we keep them sustainable, because this is a promise we've made to our employees, state and city school board and local employees, that they negotiated in their contracts. And we have a $400 million surplus this year, and I mean, this would be a year that we say, yeah, we should probably take a bigger stab at this, a bigger bite out of that problem. And so we're not taking that opportunity. I mean, we're losing that opportunity to fix them this year. Like I said, and we've done that thing in years when we've had budget deficits, huge budget deficits, in the billions of dollars. And so, I mean, I'm a little confused here and a little disappointed that we could have done more. I'm glad to hear they're all saying they're going to continue to work on it. But this is, like I said, in my earlier statement, that in the pension conferences and stuff that I've gone to, they all talk about, we want you need to make sure you fund these ahead of time, fund them as the costs occur, because otherwise you're just kicking a can down the road, and you end up with like a lot of the pension funds around the nation, that now you really have problems and there's no more road to kick it down. So I guess I'm a little disappointed in that it's not going farther. So I guess that's more of a statement than a question.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, maybe not specifically to your points, but just again to try to help with the committee to get a little bit better background on this. This bill doesn't spend any money in this current fiscal biennium. It takes into account policy related things that would actually save us about $81 million. If we didn't do that, that would be $81 million we'd never see again within the plans that we already know that through your statements and the statements of others, we need to keep on top of. Fortunately for Minnesota, we're not California. We're not Illinois, and we're not some of the East Coast states. They would be flipping in the streets, backflips in the streets, to have the kind of balances that we have in the state of Minnesota for percent of funding. I would want members to maybe think of it this way. Instead of a nonstop flight, we have a couple of stops on the flight to get to our final destination. The first stop is taking this interim step right now, then coming back in a budget year to deal with the rest of those kinds of things. Remember, the COLA is a one-year reduction at this point. Going further, well, dare I say, if we went the entire way on the COLA savings and just said, let's just put that into statute, that really puts the burden right now in where we are at on the retirees disproportionately, since we're not dealing with the budgetary stuff on here. It's not a perfect solution. It doesn't spend money that we don't have because of the governor's supplemental budget to try to do something this cycle. The same thing with the House, the same thing with the Senate. And again, we have, Senator Pappas and I have in our respective chambers, as she's the vice chair of the commission, have had numerous conversations together and numerous conversations with our leaderships and with other people and with our caucuses to talk about where can we find a happy spot. And this is maybe not an unhappy spot, and it's not a happy spot. It's more of that kind of straight spot of, you know, where nobody's happy, but we're making that progress and we're acknowledging this. Folks, if we don't do anything this year, all of the other policy stuff that we have in here Mr. Chair, maybe there's other questions from members, but I could get into some of the policy things that we wouldn't do if we didn't do this year as well, as far as the whole pensions bill, because it kind of got some tentacles of things that are taking place here as well. But I'm certainly open to answering more member questions or to going to bill summary, whichever the commission and the chair or the committee and the chair are wishing to do.
Sure. Let's go to Representative Albright first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I think it's a fortuitous circumstance that, one, we have a pension committee who I think really does understand the moving parts that surround this topic. Some of the information that has become available to us just in the last few months during this session was not really available to us in the first session when we were planning for the budget. But that being said, I think it is about a staged effort on the behalf of the MSRS TRA and the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Association. We all fully understand the ramifications for some of the levers that are at our disposal in terms of making sure that a promise made is a promise kept. That being said, there is also incumbent upon us the realization that people are living longer, but there also is the sliding scale in terms of the number of people that are becoming involved in these pension plans too. It is slowing. So while you have people that are not coming into these professions in the numbers that have been evident in the past, those same people are being released and moving on in their livelihoods to retirement now, and the expectation for that pension is paramount. And so I think, to Representative Nelson's concerns, if I could leave you, Representative Nelson, with anything, I think you can leave this committee this morning with the assurance that the integrity of and the sufficiency of these three plans, as we've articulated them, is absolutely at the forefront of making sure, as I've said, that a promise made is a promise kept. and you have my assurance, as well as I'm sure you have Representative O'Driscoll's and everyone on the pension board, that that is the forefront of our considerations going forward.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Any final member questions or discussion? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. Real quick question, Representative O'Driscoll, on the 2A amendment on page 12, section 9. I just want to, is this a more of a clarification of how things have been done in the past, that if someone is disabled that is working as a teacher at 65 or older, they wouldn't be able to collect disability, wouldn't be able to use the permanent disability standards? I was just trying to understand it a little bit when I was reading it last night.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to ask Mr. Stoffel or someone from TRA to come up, since this is one of their technical language provisions that they brought forward to the commission. I think they'll be better able to speak to that. Representative Joachim.
Sure. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Stoffel.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Representative. That provision does a couple things. It removes some old language about a $75 minimum salary per month to be qualified, so we're just taking that out. And the other is that a member who has not reached normal retirement age and at least 3 years of service would not be eligible for disability.
Representative Joachim.
So if, let's say you have a teacher that's 65 and has over the 3 years of service but is still teaching, what would then happen?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, the person would be eligible for retirement benefits at that point.
Representative Joachim.
But if they're still teaching and permanently disabled, they wouldn't be.
Okay. Could be both.
Okay. Representative just want to double check so I understood what was going on. Thanks.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, I completely disagree with you. I agree with Representative Nelson that we should be putting a lot more into it this year, and every year, I've been here 20 years, every year is a budget year. It doesn't make any sense to say it's not a budget year, because every year we adjust budgets. And a real good example of that with regard to pensions is 2006, when your speaker, Steve Swigum, was the leader on solving the problem with TRA and the Minneapolis teachers, $1 billion hole plus some other holes in there. And that was done in a so-called non-budget year. There was huge amounts changed into that. There's been other times when we've done it in the even years also. So I really think that the commission needs to go back and start looking for some money. There's money, plenty of money there this year in the budget. And I just remember what shape our pensions got into by doing this kind of thing and continue to push them off, and then we ended up having to really put in a lot of money because of pushing them off. And so I just think this is a bad procedure when we could be fixing it more.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, thank you for your reflections and comment on that. What we're doing is we're preserving both parts of the plan, taking the one part this year that we can get done. And if we didn't do that and just said we're going to not do anything, we lose that part. So we're at least wading into the water to try to get to a solution on this. And there's just, again, where we're at in the budget process, where the supplemental budgets came in, where we're moving right now, we tried to have that conversation. We attempted to try to figure things out. The will is just not globally there within the budgets of the House, the Senate, and the governor. The commission is just that, a commission. It does not have authority to be able to appropriate money. That comes back to the chambers I just mentioned, the House and the Senate, and do our work to see if there's willingness or appetite to do that or resources to do that. The Senate's got their supplemental plan, and the House has their ideas, and nobody's got pensions on there, and the governor didn't have it in his supplemental as well. It's not perfect, I'm first to admit it, but it's at least moving us in the direction that everybody wants to go and still preserves all of the pieces on the table without having to brush some things off and say we can't do that. We're just doing it in that couple of stops on the flight versus a non-stop flight.
Any final member questions or discussion?
Well, we haven't walked through the provisions.
I'm happy to do that, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
With that, I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski to join me. And members, you should have a summary of those as well. And I will go into as much detail or non-detail as members would like. So as I go through, if there's something, Mr. Chair, that comes up that a member has questions, if you want to just recognize them, and I'll take the question at that point, or Ms. Lincheski would as well. If we want to start on Article 1, which is page 2 of the handout, and that's the 2A amendment part of this. Article 1 is the Minnesota State Retirement Systems Administrative Provision Changes, and these are technical in nature that the plan brings forward, as oftentimes they do, which is followed by Article 2, which is the same or similar kinds of things that you'd see from TRA. And Representative Joachim, you identified something in that section that we had already talked about, but these are administrative provision changes. And then Articles 3 and 4 would be the other two major plans, although PERA doesn't have a funding proposal request that we're dealing with today. They did have some policy provision and cleanup languages that they would like, and so did the City of St. Paul Teachers Plan. Brings us to the top of page 3, the retirement systems generally in administrative provisions. One of the things that we did last year, and probably one of the major things that we look at in here, are two things, actually. Number one, as it relates to TRA, last year in all of the plans, St. Paul Teachers, MSRS, and PERA, we moved the target rate of return from 8.5% to 8%, and TRA had a pass on that because of this study that we just referenced today. They wanted to wait on that to deal with it all at one time. They now are going from the 8.5% to 8% to be in line with the anticipated rate of return for all programs. It also provides some IRS compliance provisions that we need to do within our plans to be compliant with federal requirements. Actuarial assumptions, I will ask Ms. Lincheski to just briefly comment on Article Number 6.
Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 6 is our section on the actuarial assumptions. Those were approved by the Pension Commission. As Representative O'Driscoll noted, one of the changes is to reduce the interest rate assumption for TRA from 8.5% to 8%, which is now consistent with all the other plans. In addition, the payroll growth assumption for TRA is reduced from, it is reduced from 3.75% to 3.5%. Similarly, that was done last year for the other plans, so TRA is now consistent with those. It updates the salary increase assumption for all the plans. And then finally, the salary increase assumption for St. Paul teachers is also increased.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Article 7 is dealing with volunteer fire relief associations. Periodically, the state auditor's office and the various relief pension groups, volunteer firefighter relief associations get together and they look for some suggested modifications and changes, and these were non-controversial changes that were brought forward. Two things that I will mention in here as well that are of note. The City of Eden Prairie has a special language in state statute that deals with the fire department and the relief association for Eden Prairie. How it got there, I'm not 100% sure, but it's there. And they came forward and they were talking to us about needing to increase the amount of cap that would be allowed for the local relief associations to be able to pay out in benefits, because they've got a lot of long-time serving members who they would meet that cap, and in order to encourage them to stay, they wanted to be able to increase that cap as an enticement to be able to do that. The commission quickly said, if it's good enough for Eden Prairie, why aren't we doing that for all cities and all relief associations across the state? And one of the reasons why that's important is we're hearing from the League of Minnesota Cities. I know I'm hearing from my cities locally that have volunteer fire departments, is it's very difficult to get daytime coverage in those communities. And another provision that we put in that was an Eden Prairie-driven and statewide application, if this bill passes, is the ability to be able to allow those people who have already served, retired, and to come back in but not have to go through another full, if you will, tour of duty to be eligible. It reduces the amount of time before they would be eligible for an additional benefit instead of having to serve for 20 years. We like this provision from the commission standpoint because it helps the cities to be able to offer something, but it also allows those individuals who want to get back in and continue to serve after they're retired an ability to be able to get in and provide that coverage. They would have to, as the cities, be paying it to someone else if they were to be able to find someone, or to a retiree who has come back, so it's a revenue-neutral provision that we would see in there. Article 8, MSRS Administered Plan Modifications. This deals with some situations where individuals may have a disability that would have missed the deadline because of the capacity of that disability to have actually made application for disability benefits under MSRS. It simply modifies the time frame that they would have to be able to do that. So if you were incapacitated and couldn't tell anybody that you needed to apply for those benefits and you didn't have the cognitive functions to be able to move forward, you could miss out on your window of opportunity. So this extends that for individuals in that situation. Page 4, Article 9, PERA administered retirement plan modifications. This is a provision that kind of puts under one roof a situation and cleans up language that helps to match closer to federal language of police officers killed in the line of duty and how they would be eligible, their families would be, for survivor benefits. And it, we right now had to go to three different shops to be able to work with this. We've now put it under a one-stop shop, you know, out of respect for the survivors and out of respect for the administrative process, but again, for the survivors who would be entitled to those benefits. Some general Article 10, generally applicable retirement changes. Again, this is some supplemental extra retirement related activities that are allowed under law. Again, others were coming up and being able to hit that maximum, but we wanted to be able to increase the maximum that could be in there so that people could continue to plan for their individual retirements. The second point under Article 10 is a provision that I had in here. We now allow for our plans, believe it or not, as ridiculous as it may sound, to be able to take gifts, inheritances, or receive death benefits from individuals who may be so inclined to want to fund the plans. We've had a lot of talk with people who are committed to their profession who may want to do something for their profession. This gives them an opportunity to do it. Some plans had it, some didn't. This cleans up the language to allow all plans the same parameters in which to do that. I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski to wrap up with the last two provisions, 10 and 11.
Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually 11 and 12 are the last two sections here, or articles on page 4. Article 11 relates to small groups or individuals. Section 1 deals with 22 Department of Transportation employees who have been granted the right to purchase service credits so that they will be able to qualify for the Rule of 90. There was some error involved in this, and so the commission felt this was appropriate. The next several sections deal all with the MNSCU IRAP plan, which is a defined contribution plan. There again were some errors made in providing notice to individuals. And so individuals who should have been able to elect out of IRAP and into a pension plan were not able to do so because there was either lack of notice or they just weren't simply were not allowed that opportunity. So these are sort of fixing those errors in the past administration, giving these individuals the ability then to be in a pension plan rather than the defined contribution plan. The final Article 12 are technical changes. Duluth Teachers is no longer a separate plan. It was merged into the Teachers Retirement Association. So a number of these changes that show up in Article 12 relate to removing references to the Duluth Teachers plan.
Mr. Chair, it's not uncommon for us to have what I call constituent issues where someone who has had a clerical error or an oversight comes to their senator or their House member and says, I think I've been missed on this. And the things that Ms. Lincheski just talked about, Representatives Tice, Knobloch, Anzels, Metza, I'm probably missing a few others, all had provisions that dealt with this. Again, it doesn't spend any state money to do this. It's the employee pays in, their entity that should have been paying in pays in. So it's, yes, there's dollars, but there's no new dollars, there's no state dollars that are going in here. It's money that would have otherwise been appropriated and should have been put in there, but because of the administrative or technical error, it didn't happen.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Member discussion. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question I have, dealing with the small group, the individuals, and I know we get those every year. What is the average? I mean, do we have an average of what these people are going to have to pay in the actuarial value? We had the big discussion about one individual, and it was a huge amount of money, and everybody kind of got concerned about that. But what is about the average amount for these?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, it depends. Because the situation we're talking about, there was that. All of this is permissive language. What TRA would have done, or MSRS, or PERA, or any of the groups, they would have said, here's the amount to the individual that it would cost, and then that individual might decide, ooh, that's a little bit more than I want, so we never see them at Pension Commission. Or they may have had that number. They come to Pension Commission, we continually remind them, did you see that number for you? Sometimes it's a couple $1,000s, sometimes it's $10,000, $20,000. It just depends upon the situation, the individual, how long it's been since the error has been detected. But again, the individual then has, if the bill passes and becomes law, permissive language to be able to pay that based on that amount. And again, if the date it said, if it's paid by May 31st, well, here it is. Well, then if it's paid by June 30th because of the bill being signed and some delays or whatever, then that will have to be increased with interest that the individual would have had to have paid in order to keep the plan solvent. So long answer, short question. I understand.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand all that. I mean, they're paying the full actuarial value of what would have been paid into them 20 years ago with it increasing in value. And again, that's why the one I mentioned before was a huge amount of money that the individual was willing to pay it in, which shocked a lot of us. But I guess so. What is kind of an average value here? I guess is there a dollar amount that? I mean, are we talking $10,000, $20,000, $1 million? Are we talking, you know, just what's the average that these people are looking at? I mean, it doesn't have to be exact. I mean, just a ballpark figure.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, I'm clearly working without a net and recalling my memory from 6-8 weeks ago when we did this, but I'm going to say that the average is between $5,000 to maybe $25,000 for an individual. Ms. Lincheski, if you need to know more specific, maybe her memory's a little bit better on it than mine is.
Mr. Chair, that's fine. That's a good figure.
Any other member questions or discussion? Seeing none, Representative O'Driscoll will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I realize that there is heartburn on this for a lot of us, but it is a step in the direction that I think everyone acknowledges that we need to go, and it still keeps all interested parties interested in seeking a solution. So, Mr. Chair, I encourage a yes vote on the House File 659 as amended, and I believe this is going to state government finance.
With that, members, Representative Pugh renews her motion that House File 659 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, members. Mr. Chair.
That concludes our work today, members. With that, we are adjourned.